Bobby Rivers, alone in a world that doesn't want him. We can rebuild him, make him better than he was before. Better, stronger, blacker. Mocha.
Oh Lord, oh Lord, oh Lord, oh Lord, what times we are living in. Hi, I'm Bobby Rivers, and thank you for tuning in for this newest edition, this podcast called Mocha, M-O-C-H-A-A. That stands for Man of a Certain U, H-U-E, and Age. Yes, I've got an AARP card, and I use it because I need the discounts. I am here, ably assisted by my friend, my fabulous friend, actor, comedian, writer, Keith Price. Hello. How are you doing today?
I am trying to make it through. This has been a very stressful week.
It has. And let's just get right to it. We got news this week in August that two great singers left us. The first one, of course, the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin. Lord, and I was a kid in South Central Los Angeles trying to put together the money that I'd earned from household chores and cutting the grass and going to the House of Aisha. That was the record store four blocks away from our house. And I am buying every single 45, every single new record put out by Aretha Franklin. She was the voice of our lives for our community.
She really was. She really was.
Did you get a chance to see? I don't know if it was if it aired all across the country, because some cities had the show preempted with a ball game, but ABC 2020 had a special hour-long tribute to Aretha Franklin.
Wow!
And Chris Conley was like the host, and no disrespect.
Please, you say what you're going to say, and then I'm going to tell you what just popped into my head as soon as you said that. Go ahead, baby.
Because I'm watching it thinking, well, you know what? Look, I was in South Central LA growing up with the records of Aretha Franklin. It was like, which I put in a blog post. I bought the records. I memorized. I could lip sync the records. I bought the albums. I watched her on TV. I saw her in person on stage. I danced. I cried when I heard that she died. So she's been a part of my life. Mm-hmm. So, and I just felt that they should have had some black baby boomers on there to talk about Aretha. Nothing against Chris Conley, but and who else?
Where's Deborah Roberts? Levant?
What, she was on there. She asked, because you know, network news people, and he's a good guy, but all white network news people think that Ture is the walking Wikipedia of all black history.
Who's Ture?
So whatever. Ture, T-O-U-R-E. He's a brother that you see on MSNBC a lot. He's a music critic. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
When you see it. So he was on as well. He should be talking about Aretha. And Deborah Roberts did the interview. And movie director John Landis was on talking about Aretha. And here was John Landis, who did Coming to America. And the Thriller video with Michael Jackson.
And why
he was there is because in the movie The Blues Brothers.
You posted that clip too.
I'm going to tell you something. And this is the hand on a Bible truth. Every time I have quit a job that I hated and I walk it out, I go, freedom, freedom.
Okay, here's your moment, Bobby. When you go back and look at that clip again, First of all, I want you to pay attention to the fact that not only is Aretha Franklin in, like, she's working like a normal person, which you know that ain't her. And secondly, she's in that waitress outfit in those house shoes.
With those house shoes.
And if you look real close, I can swear that there's like a toe, the hole cut out on the little toe.
That scene And I, when I sat through that movie, I had to review the movie because I was just starting my TV career about the time. And I know, you know, like, yeah, it's a fun, entertaining comedy. But to me, that movie really didn't come to life until that scene.
That Ray Charles.
That was so real that you could smell hair burning on a hot comb.
Someplace in that space.
It was so, and I loved it. So when John Landis and Chris Conley were saying, did you know that Aretha always carried her purse with us and had to get paid in cash? Yeah. It's like, you know what? Every black person who grew up reading Jet, Ebony, and Essence magazine knew that.
There ain't no new news.
It's news to y'all.
But see, and then it goes, it's like, I don't know if you saw the famous scandal that happened here when it was on the Fox channel here, when they had the picture of Patti LaBelle in the background with Aretha.
And they had a photo of Patti LaBelle
in the back. I was like, really? It's like, again, y'all ain't got no black people that work in that office to give it a little once over.
All you do, they just type in Aretha Franklin, Google images, and just post the first thing that pops up.
Got Patti LaBelle in the back.
Right. And it was probably a story that Aretha and Patti are friends, and they put Patti's photo up there.
No, but you know, that famous legend, the legendary moment with Patti LaBelle and Aretha Franklin at the White House when Aretha was singing, and she was walking through the crowd, and she was on her way to the stage, and Patti LaBelle was in the parade of people. Patti LaBelle tried to reach out and touch her, and she swatted Patti LaBelle's hand and went on. And I was like, ooh.
Oh, Lord.
That's old school. Lord. I mean, you know, if they don't like each other, they have every reason to, because they were contemporaries. You know what I mean? They are contemporaries. And so, what a loss, though. What a freaking loss.
What a loss, though. And me, I was thinking, because, Lord, you know, I'm same age as Madonna. So... And growing up, watching Aretha on TV, and then growing up and watching my parents making me watch live network news telecasts when it was something that Dr. King was doing.
Right.
So to have watched the whole March on Washington Day, and then other appearances Dr. King did, and then you see Aretha, and Aretha was friends with Dr. King, and then we remember like being home and watching Dr. King's funeral. You know, with watching the whole march, and then Aretha sang at the funeral. And the fact that here she was friends with Dr. King when black folks were, the March on Washington, what were we demanding? The right to vote, the right to an education, the right to use a restroom without getting lynched. You know? And this is in the land of the free in 1963.
Yeah.
And then she sang at the inauguration of America's first black president, Barack Obama. Man, I mean, that is so, what life.
But you know what is interesting
with
though?
That hat.
That when you look at her life and you look at the music and you just go with the music for a minute, and then you stop and you realize that with the music she did do the right thing, which was she stayed very very connected in such a way that they were talking about her in a short documentary I'd seen just this week where they said that I'll tell you exactly who it was. Rosanna Scotto and Lori Stokes with...
Oh, so that's where I used to work. Good Day, New York.
Good Day, New York. And they had a panel with Tracy Jordan, who used to be her publicist, Freddie Jackson, and Nona Hendricks. And
the Freddie Jackson?
The Freddie Jackson. We don't know nothing. I don't know a thing. I ain't been nowhere around. You don't know a thing.
We're just talking about
Aretha. He's a fabulous, popular singer. Anyway, so, but they had this, they were talking about how her activism was what was ultimately the goal. And that famous thing about paying Angela Davis's bond.
Yes.
You know, and when major politicians, especially black politicians, wanted to get people to come out, they would ask Aretha if she would come, and Aretha would come out and support these.
And Aretha, she did that for Dr. King, because when Dr. King came out against the Vietnam War, the white donors, they suddenly closed their purses and checkbooks.
Yep. They sure
and
did.
Aretha sang to raise funds for him. So she was always connected to the movement. And one thing about her singing is maybe her record sales fell off in the disco era because the music style changed. However, she, the artist, always remained relevant.
Absolutely. Right.
And she would come out with something new that would fit in with the change of the music at the time, you know, like the Fury of Love and the duet she did with the, George Michael. Then she was just fierce. And you think about when she covered a song, I'm sure people were flattered, but at the same time, it became her song.
It is. The only time that it hasn't worked is if you go back now, she has a new, well, she has a new one. She had, the last CD that she had was a CD where she did do covers. But even her, like you said, even her doing those covers, you're like, all right, this, I liked I Will Survive, you know, just because we're gay. And but this right, I Will Survive is
but
that
you listen
she gives
to
you
her
different.
Cover of I Say a Little Prayer for You.
Yes.
Different. Lord. And also, another one that I didn't hear news people mention, her cover of A Bridge Over Troubled Waters takes you to church.
Man.
Her cover of that Simon and Garfunkel tune takes you to church. Mm. And you can hear her influence on other singers. And here's an example. You know, it's one of those albums where she did covers of songs that were standards, like songs written in the maybe 30s and 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. If you hear on one of her early albums, Bette Midler singing the song Skylark, go back and hear Aretha's rendition. It was like Bette was heavily influenced by Aretha Franklin.
Well, there's this wonderful album that I remember that I bought approximately 25 years ago, the day that I came out of the closet. And it was an Aretha Franklin double CD called Jazz to Soul that had all of those, I think it was their Columbia years. It was a Columbia account. Yeah. And in that, there's the Skylark. There is Yesterday I Sang a Love Song.
Oh.
But today I'm singing the blues. I mean, honey, she went through it. She did Skylark. She does This Bitter Earth.
Oh, Lord. Oh, child. I grew up hearing that. Ooh, I grew up hearing that by Dinah
Washington. Shut up. Me too. But my father had all of that stuff at home, honey. That was them singing.
Yeah, we grew up with that stuff. Those were the records of our lives. Grew up with Black folks grew up with that stuff.
In their home. And the sad part, like I said, is
and
that
that's why
is
I'm watching Chris Conley on ABC going, really? You could not get somebody there to help him?
Not at all. No. And the thing is that, again, it's a... God, this is going to sound so shady. But it's like a sense of hubris that these guys kind of have when it comes to these moments. You know what I mean? Like, it's like at no point in time they're like, well, I should talk about it with her because, you know, I could talk about Aretha Franklin. I mean, I love Aretha Franklin. I'm like, I understand that, Chris. But do you not think that today of all days, like you being in charge of that conversation, do you think you could, you know, is Deborah Roberts just that busy? Does she have home stuff with Al? Is she, you know what I'm saying?
Like, because I would have had her co-host with him.
Either co-host or just have her host it. Like,
or just have a
stand back, white man. Just stand back. We got it. You know, but that's the thing. You know, you won't let us appropriate.
But do the networks ever listen to you and me? No.
No. That's why we can't get no jobs there. But this
is... Lord, child. And then the news that I heard this for the first time in that ABC 2020 special is that Oscar winner Jennifer Hudson will play Aretha in a biopic.
Oh, that totally makes sense.
Yeah,
that
did you know
totally
about
makes
that?
Sense.
What I and love this that. Will be, but there's no script yet, no director. But I'm assuming because I think they kind of intimated this with a record executive who had worked with Aretha that I think she was probably cool with the idea of this being done and starring Jennifer Hudson. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't get to the production stage where they're shooting the movie, it will be the second biopic that J-Hud has done.
Oh, that's.
After she won the Oscars, she was in a biopic about Winnie Mandela. She played Winnie, Terrence Howard as Nelson. I love you, Maine, but I hate apartheid. But they never... Thank you for getting that. They
never... Sometimes this is just for us, Bobby. It is just for us. We love you, Miss Carolyn, but sometimes this is just for us.
For us. But they never released the movie. And that made me mad. I went, you know what? Every tired rom-com starring Katherine Heigl came out. You couldn't say,
shouldn't
you couldn't
to
release
DVD?
This. Exactly. She had won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for Dreamgirls. She's playing Winnie Mandela, and they shelved the movie.
Well, you know what? Can I say something that's going to sound a little incorrect, I should say?
Incorrect. Okay.
It'll sound a little incorrect. And this is only because I have now had, in the course of my career in life, I've had the opportunity to meet Miss Hudson on several occasions. And okay. We met her right after she had won the Oscar, right before the Sex and the City movie came out, somewhere in that time frame when I met her. And she had that new album, her new CD had come out. And right. I remember seeing her and thinking to myself, God, she's so beautiful. God, she's so tall. Oh, she's so wonderful. She's so sweet. And just everything about her was delicious. And then a few years later, she comes back to New York, and now she's on Broadway in The Color Purple. Yeah. Now, I have had enough Broadway experience of watching Broadway shows to be able to discern whether someone's a decent enough actor that can carry the role or whatever. And I have to be honest, and you know, I'm saying it because I know no one else would be able to say it or will own up to it, but they'll say it on the side, that when she was in The Color Purple, the singing shut the front door. Just forget about it, honey. That push the button is everything. But the acting was a little, it needed some help. It needed a little touch. And so now when you tell me now years ago that they did this movie, it makes me wonder if maybe perhaps someone had like a real moment. Like they got past we've got Jennifer Hudson with the Oscar. She's in it. We've got Terrence Howard with his Oscar nomination. Did he have an Oscar nomination for Flown?
Yes, he did. Best actor.
Yeah. And so we've got this kind of energy going, you know, she's hot, he's hot. We could just do this. And then they did it and probably looked at it and went, maybe, I don't know. Because even if you look at Sex in the City, Jennifer Hudson's, you know, she's kind of walking through. She's having a moment, but she's walking through. And I'm not shading her in terms of the fact that she got the gig, because you know what? Right. Get the gig, girl. Do you.
Get the gig. You got bills sing, to pay.
And she got bills to pay and a baby to take care of and all this other stuff. So she's got that stuff going on. But it's like, at the same time, if you have to really be objective, you have to give the moment.
I get your point. I totally get
you. You
got
to be the moment. So when you So when you go back to talking about her doing Aretha Franklin, there was a rumor years ago, too, here in New York, when Patina Miller had just got to Tony for Pippin, the same year with Billy Porter when he won for Kinky Boots, and Cicely Tyson, thank you, for Trip to Bountiful. That was a very busy season for black folks. And
and a wonderful season.
Right? And and the rumor was that Aretha wanted Patina Miller at one point to play her in the story of her life, if they were going to do it. And I was like, I could get behind that. And part of it is because I love me some Patina Miller, but I also know that the acting aspect of it is a lot stronger. And you have to really be able to do it all when you play these biopic people. You can't just be able to just sing and hope that the lip syncing is going to work. You have to really kind of commit to the craft. And you have to commit
Example,
to it.
Jamie Foxx as Ray Charles.
Yes. Yes.
Man.
Can I just
digress for a minute?
Yes.
I went to see a movie. I was with another buddy of mine, and the trailers came on, and it was a trailer for Ray. We were sitting there, and the first thing that my friend said, she turned to me and she said, "Wow, look, a documentary about Ray Charles."
Wow.
He was that good. We did. We went, oh my God, it's not it. That's Jamie Foxx.
Wow.
It was that good.
That Wanda from Living Color as Jamie Foxx's Wanda. Remember that?
Right.
And here he is doing Ray Charles and winning an Oscar.
I got you in my lingerie. You know, went from that in Living Color, went from a sitcom, and then turned it around and gave that solid dramatic performance.
Yeah.
That changed Oprah's mind about the Oscar.
Exactly.
I don't know. If you folks listening, do any of you remember when Oprah, and I'm not saying this to be bitchy, but I just remember watching the show. She had Leonardo DiCaprio on, and he was the guest for the whole show. Mm-hmm. And he had, The Aviator was coming out.
Ah, that was one of those.
You know,
going nuts.
And it was one of those shows where the audience has seen the movie and then Oprah does the show.
Right.
So she goes, "Didn't you love it?" And everybody cheers.
Of course, because Leo Caprio's in the room. What are you supposed to do?
So Oprah gave her her review. You know, she gave her prediction, mm-hmm. and she stood up and said, "Go get your Oscar, Leo! Go get your Oscar, Leo!" Go! And then Ray came out.
She had to sit quiet.
I think she had that show burned, just accidentally erased it.
Whoops!
Because and you know, when they had those after shows where Oprah would have the show the day after the Oscars, mm-hmm. and she had Jamie on, and he won, and she hugged him, and she said, "I knew you'd win."
Wow!
And I went, "I bet." And I thought to myself, "I wonder if Leonardo just took her phone off his speed dial, took the number right off."
See? That's hilarious.
But she had no... Who knew this was coming?
Who knew it was coming?
Who knew that brilliance was coming? But like you said, that is the kind of brilliance that you need in a biopic.
Yep.
And maybe Jennifer at the time did not deliver that when she played Winnie Mandela.
Exactly. Because, I mean, that was her second movie after Dreamgirls. And it's and then she's doing Dreamgirls where she's just singing. You know what I mean? Basically.
Right.
Hard luck, you know, chunky broad that gets bumped because she's fat.
That's
sad, tragic story.
So let's just see if that happens. Hey, you know, we wish Jay Hud well.
Mm-hmm.
Aretha, girl, may you rest in peace. And the other singer was a jazz singer, not as widely known as Aretha Franklin, but Aretha Franklin, I'm sure, knew of this singer. Now, a lot of people have not heard, they're not familiar with Morgana King, the jazz singer.
Yes.
If millions of people saw The Godfather,
yes.
they know her as the woman who played Mama Corleone. And they probably have that visual image of a matronly woman, where Morgana King was a fierce jazz singer. Mm-hmm. And she didn't get a lot of radio play. She didn't, you know, you would turn on stations and you would hear Carmen McRae, Sarah Vaughan, Sinatra. But you wouldn't hear a lot of Morgana, but in the community, she was revered. And she passed away at age 87 of cancer. She passed away in Palm Springs. If you've seen The Godfather, which is currently on Netflix, you can go to, and you'll see Morgana King as Mama Corleone. Do your ears a favor. Treat yourself. Go to YouTube. Search Morgana King singing A Taste of Honey. And take your shoes off and make sure you got a cocktail in one hand. Ooh, baby.
Because you're going to fall out.
Another great voice that's in heaven right now.
Wow.
So God bless both of those women, Aretha Franklin and Morgana King. Mm-hmm. Yes. I want to talk about the Oscars.
Okay.
First of all, can I say this? I am so glad that Crazy Rich Asians is making big money at the box office for its opening weekend.
Fabulous. Isn't that the best?
Fabulous. Now this new thing about the Oscars, want to add a category. Best popular movie.
The category is.
Okay, now when I first heard, first of all, this did not come out, you know, when my buddy, because she was very good to me, when Cheryl Boone Isaacs was president, and there was some new ruling with the Academy, there was always a formal announcement. But this thing came out, it was like the announcement on Twitter. It's like, what? And everybody hated it. Everybody hated a separate award for most popular film. And I thought, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then all the high tone, you know, movie columnists and critics are like, well, here's what's wrong with that. Blah, blah, blah. And I went, okay. All of us who have grown up watching the Academy Awards. Now, first of all, this is what the story was, that, well, ABC feels that the Oscars are too long, so they want to make the show shorter and then have this most popular award. Now, when I heard about this most popular award, I had this knee-jerk reaction. I had the same feeling that my parents always had when I was a kid and they watched the Miss America pageant and they saw one black contestant. They always said, oh, they're going to give her Miss Congeniality and get her out the way because she is not going to be one of the finalists. Because
they don't want her to but get mad at
that. Like, they want to just give her something to make it seem like, okay, yeah, it's nice.
We waited all that time for Vanessa Williams.
We all that time.
Just, all and then she had all her business out on the streets.
All her business. So that was my first reaction. Now, here's my theory. The Oscars were always in April. And that was a good month because it was like around tax time. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a slow month because movies, in order for movies to qualify for the Oscars, they have to open by the last week of December.
Right.
So a lot of prestige movies would open in limited runs for that last week mm-hmm. in L.A. and New York. And maybe if there was great buzz,
and then do wider
they had
release.
Time to open wide and people could see the movie because the Oscars were in April.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not in April anymore. There are 4 months that are sweeps months, ratings months in TV. May, which is a major one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't do it in May because a lot of the newscasters have to be on their shows in May.
Right.
The TV people are promoting their shows. And
mm-hmm.
some of the broadcast folks have to maybe fly to another country for a special broadcast. So it's not going to work. Then you have July. Nobody wants to be on a red carpet in a tuxedo in July in Hollywood.
Nope.
It's too hot. And that's people are on vacation.
Nope.
The next month, the next big ratings month is November.
Mm-hmm.
You got Jewish holidays, you got Thanksgiving, and people are getting ready for the holidays. No. That leaves February.
All right.
Also, so what they've done now is they pushed the Oscars, they, meaning the network, got the Academy to push the Oscars to February.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got this traffic jam. Because we got these other shows that we didn't have before. Screen Actors Guild Awards, the Golden Globes, you know, whatever else is there. And now, if something opens the last week of December, and it's a prestige film, maybe something subtitled, the national audience doesn't have a chance to see it by February because mm-hmm.
There's not enough time.
Now, the other thing is, this is really, which I have not heard any columnists mention, this is really corporation versus art.
Yes.
Because if a blockbuster movie wins Best Picture, the ratings are usually higher for the Oscars, like a Titanic
right.
or Lord of the Rings, because those are like the big blockbuster movies. And according to the analysis, when they got the ratings, the ratings for the Oscars were higher. And when they're higher, then you can increase your ad rates for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Charge people more money.
Based
so you get double bang for your buck. If it's in a sweeps month, oh my God, let's get like really big ratings. And then for the following year, we can increase the ad rates. But then when you have a movie like Spotlight or Birdman or The Shape of Water, it's not a big audience movie like Wonder Woman.
Right.
So the network has really leaned on the Academy, saying it's about time. It's not. It's about the network trying to increase its ad rates and get higher ratings numbers when they're totally not concerned about the art. And I don't think anything has to be changed. I don't think they need this award. It's simple. If they want the show, if they want popularity in that, then the Academy just has to do that one thing you and I have mentioned before. Up until like 1944 and 1945, there could be 10 nominees for Best Picture. And then for decades, it was 5 nominees.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Academy increased it to 10 again. Then give us 10 nominees.
Then give us 10 nominees. That's all you have to do.
Ever since they reinstalled the there could be 10 nominees for Best Picture, we've yet to get 10 movies nominated for Best Picture.
You know what's so funny? There was a conversation the other day about, I was talking to some Broadway people, and we were talking about like how the Tonys are done at the end and how the best musicals, the choices for the best musicals happen, and people are like either shocked. So this year, the show that won was The Band's Visit, and it was nominated in addition to Frozen, Mean Girls, and SpongeBob. Those were the 4 categories, right?
Uh-huh.
So they also had Donna Summer the Musical, Margaritaville. There was another musical that didn't get, The Prince of Broadway, that did not get any kind of love whatsoever. And The Prince of Broadway is already closed, so that I could see that happening. But like Donna Summer and Margaritaville were still running at the time of the nominations, at the time of everything that was going on. And the bottom line is, as you say, there's popular and then there's the art. people will go to the popular, people will go to the art. And it's the same thing with theater. People will go with, you know, people are still stabbing themselves in the eye to try to see Hamilton. You know what I mean?
Like, right, right.
And so there is that. But then there's other shows as well. But the bottom line is that all of the people that vote for all of this stuff, they're all part of the industry. Ultimately, in the end, this is their business. This is their economy. So when you have a slot, like they only nominated 4 musicals. There was room for a 5th. Same thing.
Yeah.
You know, that is like, would it have killed you to have given Donna Summer a best musical? Well, you and I both know it probably would not have won compared to what they were so loving about
still.
The dancers. But the idea is that in the end, the people that vote for the best musicals, best things, are all the producers and theater owners around the country. And so they're voting for the show that's going to fit the best in their theater if it wins and it tours. That's why when you look back at a couple of the big winners, it's like they were kind of small shows because right. those are easier to travel. Those are easier to move. Those are easier to do things. And so it's like, but that defeats the purpose because you have the whole world looking. So if you want people to come and see, Black Panther, and you want them to also see The Shape of Water, and you want them to see these other shows, it's like if they know that people are paying attention to them in the industry, you got 10 slots. If you put 10 movies in there, 5 art films and 5 popular films, you've solved the problem.
You're exactly right.
You've now, solved the problem.
I just made a quick list of in recent years, movies that could have that I would have put in there as a Best Picture nominee when, you know, we had spaces for 10,
yeah,
but we only got like 7.
Yeah,
Straight Outta Compton,
uh-huh.
which was critically acclaimed,
exactly,
made big money here and overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Straight Outta Compton, Fruitvale Station,
yes,
Ryan Coogler,
mm-hmm.
who gave us Black Panther, and 4 movies directed by women. 2 horror thrillers which knocked me out: A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, and The Babadook. Have you ever heard of those?
I've not heard of either of those, and now you know I'm going to go have to Netflix to find them.
Okay, let me tell you. Anna Lily Amanpour, I did not want to see that. A female friend of mine said, you need to come see this movie with me. It's in black and white. It is one of the best vampire movies I have ever, ever, ever seen.
Oh, wow.
It's a feminist vampire movie, and it's witty, and it's smart. It's in black and white. And it takes place in Iran, modern-day Iran.
Fudge.
And the vampire is a female. And her victims are usually males who abuse women or don't give women equal rights.
Vigilante vampire.
Ow! I know, and it's so hip. And she kind of falls in love. But here's the thing. It's a city in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't shoot it in Iran. The director needed a place that looked like a cultural desert, so she shot it in Bakersfield, California. Perfect. It's so good. The Babadook, Jennifer Kent wrote and directed this movie. It was a movie that I was not interested in until a man on Twitter kept tweeting, this movie is excellent. It knocked me out. It's a great horror thriller. And you know who that man was?
Who?
William Friedkin. And I went,
no.
William Friedkin? He directed The Exorcist.
And
the
he
French
said
Connect.
This is scary? Shut up.
Babadook. It's like a paranoid horror thriller where a widow has a sickly little boy and you're going, is he possessed or is she possessed or is the house possessed? It's good.
Oh,
Mudbound, Dee Reese.
Mudbound.
I would have put that in for a Best Picture nomination.
Sure, and it should have been in there.
And I loved what Patty Jenkins did with Wonder Woman. Okay. You know what? It's not Shakespeare. It's not Ibsen. It's not Chekhov. But man, it was wildly entertaining and smart and well done.
Wow.
But you know, and Wonder Woman. If Wonder Woman had gotten the Oscar nominations and the Oscar awards that The Shape of Water did, I bet you ABC would have left the Oscars alone. They would not be leaning on them to do this popularity award or to try or for shorter time. And for shorter time, just take out some of the comedy bits. You don't need all those comedy segments.
You don't need all those comedy segments. You don't need, I'm glad that the documentarians and everybody's getting their due and time, but it's like at some point you're going to have to decide what is going to be better for television, TV, or what's going to be better for...
Right. You know, for the separate awards, you know, one best key grip, you know, best caterer, give them the separate awards, you know, and let us see the speech by the Lifetime Achievement winner.
Exactly.
You know, like the special, like the Angela Lansbury or Harry Belafonte, you know, the, you know, yeah.
You make,
I think it's an easy solution.
It's a programming issue. And again, if the industry is that concerned, it's like then... utilize what you have. It's like you've given yourself room to make 10 pictures happen. There are 5 really great artistic films that are probably popping, and there's 5 really great popular films that are just as good, interesting, quality, blah, 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 that could be in the same category. Now, if only one of them wins, it doesn't matter which one does because they're all nominated. And ultimately, that's the whole goal.
Feeling was, are you doing this and trying to keep Black Panther from not being in the best picture
running? That's what I think. That's exactly what I thought. That was the first thought that came into my head. It's like, Cheryl Boone Isaacs ain't been gone a year yet, and y'all already showing out. You know what I mean? Like who? Like, let's just give the popular films that because we need to sell, you know, save the art for the art people. And it's like, no, that's not how this works. Ozzie Davis said this before. This is a trade show.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to play the race card, but that was my first thought.
That was mine.
Are you mad that critics and audiences love Black Panther, and you still mad that Mary Jenkins snatched the wig off of La La Land? The winner is really Moonlight.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, you know, and then again, I remember watching all of those folks from Black Panther all sitting in that one little section, and I was like, I'm sure they were just sitting there thinking to themselves, do you know that right now, as I take this quick breath, I just made $1 million. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that movie just was making money hand over fist. It's made hand over fist. And now it's in release and in DVD release and stuff. Now it's even probably making more money.
Exactly.
So, you know, and it was a great film. It was a really good film. And I'm not a superheroes person. That's the thing. So,
and we mentioned this before. It came out at the right time.
Right.
Because when you're seeing. You're seeing Africa in all its cultural glory was right about the time Mango Mussolini called Africa a blank hole country.
Motherfucker.
I'm really, shithole country. That's what he called it.
And then there's Wakanda.
I forget. It's a podcast. I can say it.
You can say it.
Oh.
FCC ain't mad at me yet, so we can do it. We
needed that. We needed that.
You know, and to prove to the world that people of color have worth and people of color have art and people of color have, like, and it's like, but at the same time, why we keep having to do this? Why do we have to keep having to do this?
I know, it's so
exhausting.
Because, you know, and I'll tell you folks, Keith and I know this as men of color who we're not stars, but we see how the industry works. You know, like a black filmmaker like a Ryan Coogler can get a movie made like a Fruitvale Station, which the critics rave about and should be a Best Picture nominee. But that doesn't mean that Ryan Coogler is going to get the big money to market and promote his film like people give to an Adam Sandler. That's just the way it is. So, and again, about the lack of racial and gender diversity in the field of film critics, we people of color know, you know, we know that. So that's why we want to help when, yes, come to me, let's be on camera and talk about your project because I know you need some help promoting it. Wow. We've seen how this is. It's the same thing, I think, with some Broadway and off-Broadway shows.
Yeah, it's all the same, you know. And it only takes that one. It takes one person to give a shit. And then there you are.
Yes. One person. So that's what I've been, you know, the Oscars, we don't need the popularity award. You know, you just give us 10 nominees for Best Picture because there can be 10 nominees for Best Picture.
Yeah. And then again,
that's all you need to do.
You know, it's your secret file. You can, you know, it's like five art, five new.
You know, if next year 2 of the nominees for Best Picture were Black Panther and Crazy Rich Asians, woo, child, people would be thrown down.
But see, but you know what, though? Instead of us throwing down, we just need to celebrate. Because
that's what I meant. They'd be thrown down in like celebration. They would be so happy.
You know, because you know, the thing is that in the end, what's going to happen is that if that does happen, the press is going to try to make it blacks versus Asians. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, and we ain't got time
for that. And we don't have time
for that. You know, and here's another thing. I'm glad you said that, because there's one thing that I have been seeing on Twitter that I love. It's like black people saying, we got to support Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes.
Black Twitter saying, no, we got to go see this too. Mm-hmm. I love that.
We have to support them all. You know, and support them all, because in the end, we are the ones, you know, if we don't support each other, then it's going to be hard to present that front to people, to tell them that, you see, Black Panther, Crazy Rich Asians, how much money did those two films make?
Right.
How much money did they make? And, you know, and look at it and be objective and not try to be, you know, racist.
Right. Exactly. Crazy Rich Asians, 22 million for opening weekend, maybe a little bit more, but that's the kind of money that makes Hollywood executives say, can we do a sequel? And you know, that cast would say, oh, hell yes.
Oh, hell yes. Oh, hell right. yes. But I mean,
oh,
again,
hell yes.
I'm still waiting for my Asian superhero now, because I haven't seen one yet. I mean, did I miss it? I mean, I just started watching.
You know what? It is just me. If people made Daniel Day Kim the next James Bond, I'd be paying to see it.
No, honey, that's too much of a stretch. You see how mad they got about the whole Idris Elba thing?
Oh God, yeah.
You're making them work too hard. Yeah,
that's right,
Bobby.
That's right.
Besides, we need the Asian guys to do all the tech work. That's what they're probably going to say.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, I said it. I'm sorry, but it's true.
Do I have time to mention a movie? A mockumentary that people should see.
Sure.
You know, I mentioned this before. One of the things that I have loved about my career, one of my favorite things to do, mm-hmm. is to interview or bring into my spotlight somebody whose work that I saw that the audiences don't know, but I really want the audiences to know them.
Yes.
Okay, so, and this is about this was between 2006 and 2008, when I was working with Whoopi Goldberg on her morning radio show. There is a documentary called CSA, Confederate States of America. Kevin Wilmot, who was a professor at Kansas State University, he's a film professor. He did this movie, and here's a way of describing it. It's like a Chappelle show, Key and Peele show, meet Woody Allen's Zelig, and a Ken Burns documentary. Mm-hmm. For some reason, she was not into it. But you know what? The way things are now with Mango Mussolini in the White House, mm-hmm. you need to see this because it's relevant now.
I love that.
So we didn't get to talk to Kevin Wilmot on the radio show, on Whoopi Goldberg's morning radio show. But he could be up for an Oscar next year because he co-wrote Black Klansman with Spike Lee.
Which I'm going to see tomorrow.
Which is getting rave reviews. Rave reviews. I went, dang. So CSA came out, Spike saw it, and it's like, oh, come write with me. So now they got an award at the Cannes Film Festival, and it could do something when the Oscar nominations come out next year.
Well, let's hope that it doesn't get thrown into the popular movie category. Black Klansman, Black Panther, and Black Azure, you know what I mean? Like, whatever's coming.
Yeah.
Something else with Black in the title.
Three movies this summer that all got excellent reviews. Black Klansman,
mm-hmm.
Sorry to Bother You.
Yep.
And Blindspotting.
Yes.
Blindspotting with one of the actors from Hamilton.
Yeah, David Diggs, yes.
Yes.
The Tony Award-winning David Diggs, hello.
There you go.
See?
There you go.
But how wild is that, though? I mean, you know, as we're talking about that category, because I could already see that that's where those will go. That special category. We don't need to mix and mingle. You know, you'd figure after Shape of Water and all of that hard work that Mr. Man did, the bear. What's this?
Oh, Guillermo del Toro.
You would think, you know, the door would be slightly open more, but no, doesn't sound like it.
Man, oh, Lord.
Because again, what it is that when it is about other folks, the interest is very small. Right. They're not that excited about it. You know, but when it's them, what do you mean? This was an artistic feel. How dare Meryl Streep not get another nomination?
Exactly.
Although I do feel that way about Meryl Streep, but still. Oh, child, because these folks, they will do it. They are doing it.
Lord, we covered a lot in this podcast. Films, Broadway, politics, real personal life, career disappointments, and spiritual enlightenment. Thank you for listening to Mocha, Man of a Certain Hue and Age. I am Bobby Rivers. You can find me on Twitter at Bobby Rivers TV. And Keith, where can they find you?
They can find me at KeithPrice'sCurtainCall.com, first and foremost, and everything about the podcast, as well as at KP Curtain Call on Twitter. And if you want to see me when I'm doing my comedy, check me out at Comedy Daddy as well.
Perfect. Let's go get a cocktail. Thanks,
yes. Coach Phillips.
Mm-hmm. Aretha, girl, may you rest in peace.
And I'll survive. I will survive.